Wind already generates around 20% of Europe's electricity and is on track to play an even greater role in delivering a secure, competitive, and decarbonized energy system in the future. But reaching that future will depend on far more than installing new turbines. It requires joined-up policies, smarter grid planning, faster electrification, and above all, effective implementation. To learn more about the policies that will shape Europe's wind future and determine whether the continent will meet its ambitious renewables targets over the next decade, I speak with Vasiliki Klonari, Director of Energy System Integration at Wind Europe. From the post-2030 energy framework to the Electrification Action Plan and EU ETS review, Vasiliki explores why the next 12 to 18 months represent a defining moment for Europe's energy transition. She also highlights how integrating wind, storage, demand response, and electrification can strengthen energy security and help Europe achieve genuine strategic autonomy. However, according to Vasiliki, it all comes down to whether Europe can be ruthlessly serious about implementation. I'm Pamela Larg, and this is the Energy Transitions Podcast. Vasiliki, thank you so much for joining me today to talk about what is such a critical topic at this point in Europe's energy transition, which of course is wind energy, integrating wind energy, and the policies that are helping or hindering that process. So perhaps we could start just by looking at the context within Europe and, you know, how much wind power is actually being generated and integrated.
Hi, Pamela. Thank you very much for the invitation and the opportunity to discuss the Energy Transitions podcast. So wind energy already delivers today a fifth of Europe's electricity, about 20%, and it's on its way to half by 2050. It's actually now the second biggest source of electricity in Europe after nuclear. Europe now has just over 300 gigawatts of wind installed, about 265 is onshore and 40 is offshore, 39 actually to be precise. Germany is by far the biggest fleet at nearly 78 gigawatts and Spain second at around 33. Last year alone, the industry invested 45 billion euros in new capacity and it employs more than 440,000 people across Europe. In terms of factories, it has built 250 factories across various member states. But Europe still imports over 60% of its energy as fossil fuels. And by the way, the fuel import volume gets much higher if we include uranium for nuclear energy. Europe does not produce it. For you to understand the comparison, China's figure of fossil fuel imports is only 25%, and the United States is actually a net exporter. And of course, that dependence is very expensive. You might have heard in just the first 44 days of the United States attack to Iran, we spent 22 billion euros extra on imported fuel. And so I think it's a great opportunity that we can discuss about these topics. For your context, something I would like to mention is that based on Wind Europe study, a renewables-based system that is driven by accelerated electrification and renewables deployment can save Europe over 330 billion euros by 2035 and up to 1.6 trillion euros by 2050. Yet, electrification has been stuck at around 20% for a decade, while China is growing four times faster than ours. And this is why I would like to talk about wind energy, but more generally about energy system integration.
Thank you for painting that contextual picture for us, Vasiliki. And I think, as you say, you know, unlocking that 330 billion euros by 2035 and ensuring that electrification continues at pace requires policies to really support rather than hinder progress. And last week, we saw so much coming from the European Commission in terms of the EU ETS review, the electrification plan. So there's a lot to talk about, but let me not get ahead of myself. Let's talk about some of the the legislation that we see that is on the cards for Europe and that is really going to impact system integration?
So this is genuinely the most consequential legislative cycle for Europe's energy future for the next 10 to 15 years. And most of it lands in the next 12 to 18 months, I would say. Indeed, there are six big files will be under discussion. The first I would mention is the post-2030 energy framework, which sets the targets for Europe's energy transition. Then the electrification action plan, which was announced about 1 week ago with a proposed indicative target of 46% electrification by 2040. This is about doubling up our share of electricity in the European energy mix, and which will hopefully become a binding target in the post-2030 framework. Then the European grids package, of course, the EU ETS review, our carbon pricing mechanism, something smaller but very important, and that needs to be consistent with the other files, a new proposal on network charges and electricity taxation that will be amending part of the electricity regulation. And the last one I would like to mention is which is very important for our clean technology supply chains, the EU Cybersecurity Act. The revision of the act will be crucial, and I will explain later why. Alongside those that will be discussed now, of course, we also have the implementation of the Industrial Accelerator Act and the Net Zero Industry Act and the foreign direct investment screening rules for our supply chain. Now, individually, each one of these files is very important, but taken together, they can really decide whether Europe will electrify fast enough to be secure and competitive, or if it will stay hooked on imported fossil fuels. So our whole sector is watching this package as one.
My question to you is, before we start delving into the implementation of some of these policy measures, are member states moving from a state of talking about renewables targets to actually delivering on these targets?
That's a very good question. Yes. And honestly, that shift is a sign of maturity. But something I would like to flag, we now take targets almost for granted, which is a privilege. It means we can afford to scrutinize the delivery side, but I would strongly push back on framing it as either or. So targets are not decoration. They are not just nice to have. They give the political commitment. They set the direction and the pace. And above all, they are the investment signal. They keep supply chains resilient and anchored in Europe. And they drive the skills and education pipelines that we need per case. In our case, in the case of the wind industry, it is the skills and education pipeline that a 440,000 person industry depends on. So the answer is not to drop ambition and focus only on delivery. It is to keep the ambition and get ruthlessly serious about implementation. So when you look at the whole picture, the benefits of having had targets massively outweigh the frustrations of chasing them.
Vasiliki, what are the biggest risks to achieving these targets?
That's a difficult question. So the biggest risk, in my view, is governments not treating it as a priority in their national strategies and in their international strategies to cut Europe's and their countries, of course, dependency on fossil fuel imports. Every year we delay, we hand more leverage to third countries that are not permanent allies, letting them shape Europe's competitiveness and ultimately Europeans' cost and quality of living. You see it most where gas-dependent member states in Europe keep investing in gas anyway, locking in imports for decades. And part of the problem is also how we talk about the transition. Too often we mention it as a cost or a burden, when this is really about a better quality of life, a lower cost of living in the mid or even in the short term, in some cases. It's about cleaner air, it's about lower bills, it's about an energy system that is genuinely Europe's own energy system. But we tend to not really promote very crucial aspects. Now, regarding the risk, in my view, is short-termism, which, of course, flows from what I mentioned before. We have, for instance, in the EU, we have EU laws that are very good and that are there since years now, but they are not yet applied at national level. And very often, we see long-term benefits from the transition sacrificed to four-year electoral cycles, maybe because many clean energy transition investments pay back over 10 or 15 years, which is two or three electoral cycles. So sometimes it's really hard to keep citizens and governments focused on benefits that arrive well beyond the next votes. So as I said at the beginning, for me, the biggest risk is not having political commitment at national level for this transition, again, at national level.
You mentioned or touched on earlier the fact that, you know, these renewables targets, and obviously specifically wind energy targets, are very much political commitments, but also very critical investment signals. And I think that is really what I'd like to focus on now. How should Europe approach its renewables targets to really provide investors and manufacturers with the certainty they need?
Yeah, how Europe should approach, it should approach targets with firm, binding, and above all, concrete targets. Investors and the supply chain work on 10 to 15 year lead times. So talking about turbine factories, cable plants, ports, vessels, so everything we will need in our supply chains. And percentages will not build factories. Volumes in gigawatts will do. And this is why we need binding 2040 EU renewables target that translates into clear national annual wind volumes, onshore and offshore. We also need a binding 2040 electrification target published alongside the renewables one, so that demand and supply grow in parallel, and so that Europe genuinely minimizes its energy system costs and, of course, the energy bills for its citizens. But at the same time, targets without delivery instruments are just declarations of intent. So we need the proven toolkit to be applied everywhere. We need multi-year auction pipelines published 3 years ahead with committed volumes and budgets. We need binding permitting deadlines. We need a facilitated framework for repowering of existing wind farms. And we also need overriding public interest for wind and grid, this principle to apply. And of course, the freedom for project developers to use both two-sided contracts for difference and PPAs, power purchase agreements. So crucially, we should avoid reopening the Renewable Energy Directive for a fourth time in 4 years. And we need to really implement what we have. The stability itself is a certainty that investors are really asking for right now.
Indeed. And when we were preparing for this podcast, Vasiliki, one of the topics that we discussed was, of course, grid infrastructure and how it's becoming quite a bottleneck to renewables deployment. What does the proposed European grids package get right? And where does Wind Europe believe it should go further?
Indeed, Pamela, so grids are actually the number one bottleneck for deployment of wind energy today. So the wind industry very much likes this package. Now, what the package gets right? First of all, the binding European central scenario for system planning. This for us is really about commitment to a scenario that can benefit everyone and that shows to the whole supply chain where Europe is heading to. Then, of course, what's very important in the package is the intention to prioritize grid connections that address system needs. Right now, we have hundreds of gigawatts of queues of wind farms and solar PV waiting to be assessed for grid connection. We need urgently to move away from the first-come, first-served principle that has been applied for many years in all countries, but this without continuing to randomly allocating grid capacity in other ways. So we need really to have a strategy and a plan. But it's already very good that the grid packets recognizes this need and gives direction. Then we also like the fact that the grid package recognizes the need for early involvement of countries that benefit from cross-border projects in cost sharing. And we also like the provisions for permitting simplification for repowering and hybrids. So we would like to keep all of that. Now, where it must go further? Well, it still risks keeping a too bottom-up planning approach. We need a stronger, ambitious, top-down EU level or regional level planning logic that benefits all. And the other thing is that bottlenecks are still handled nationally, and transmission and distribution develop at very different speeds in different countries. And this is actually a big issue that is not addressed by the package. Then we need to scale EU grid funding, multiply it by 5. We need to mobilize private capital in smart ways for keeping network charges affordable. This is not addressed extensively in the package. We also need to mobilize supply chain financing, including via the European Investment Bank. And we urgently need anticipatory investment in distribution grids and a real connection to reform at national level that is, again, not hijacked by electoral cycles. So we need new demand to connect quickly, not just generation. And one final thing I would like to mention, that we need a proper implementation of the electricity directive rules that are there since many years on third-party grid development when the system operators are not capable of doing it on time.
Vasiliki, as Director of Energy System Integration, how do you see the relationship evolving between wind, storage, demand response, and electrification?
Well, these have stopped being separate conversations, at least for the wind industry. At Wind Europe, we see them as one system now. That's exactly the whole point of my role. First, electrification is the existential piece. Without it, you don't have strategic autonomy or competitiveness for Europe. And you also don't have the business case for new wind or new solar PV. But around that, you also need a balanced, optimal mix of wind and solar generation, storage, and demand response all pulling together. I mentioned this before also with a first-come, first-served approach. My ask to member states is concrete. Task your regulators, TSOs and DSOs, to actually assess that optimal mix in their geographies rather than letting it emerge by accident, for instance, by randomly requiring the addition of battery storage in every new renewables project. Because so far, it has been emerging by accident due to the first-come, first-served grid allocation. It has given us an unthoughtful mix of technologies and high system costs. Moving away from that has to be based on a smart strategy and on a plan that minimizes total system costs and therefore the bill that the consumer ultimately has to pay. So integration of all these technologies is not a technical nice to have. It's really how you keep electrification affordable in the long term.
Do you believe that policymakers are starting to see this bigger picture, this more integrated system perspective, or are they still operating in silos?
Well, to be fair, there has been a real visible effort to break out of the silos, and I really want to give credit for that. But we are now the crunch. All these files that I mentioned before, the post-2030 framework, the grids package, the EU ETS, electrification taxes, network charges, they only work if they are coherent with each other. So a brilliant electrification target with their own grid rules and weak carbon pricing, it will cancel itself out. Same for a strong carbon price with the wrong tax treatment for electricity. So the honest answer is the intention to integrate is indeed there, but the test is whether the legislation that is being discussed right now will actually line up. So maybe ask me again at the end of 2027. By then, these files will be largely settled, and we will know whether Europe genuinely built an integrated energy policy or if it continued working in silos.
Okay, I'll put it in my calendar, Vasiliki, so that we can reach out, because we will definitely need to discuss this again in 2027. For now, though, touching on WindEurope's stance on the importance of electrification as one of Europe's biggest opportunities, what should an effective implementation of the electrification action plan actually look like in terms of accelerating demand for renewable electricity?
So first, what's very important, and I mentioned it before, is that the member states that will be implementing this, they will really need to understand the moment. So in 2022, priority was about diversifying our energy sources. Now in 2026, it's about strategic autonomy. It's really a genuine historic turning point. And I would say this is very important to keep in mind from the beginning. So of course, the plan has a major objective, which is to make clean electricity the obvious economic choice. And that comes down to a few priorities. The first one is the gas to electricity price ratio. The European Commission's benchmarks in the published plan, which is to have a ratio lower than 2.5 for households and lower than 2 for industry by 2030 are the right instinct. Member states must really take this KPI very seriously, and most of them actually have energy costs already as a top political priority. And in general, today electricity is often taxed more heavily than the fossil fuel is meant to replace. In Spain, with such a good power mix and low wholesale prices, regulated charges on electricity are 19 times higher than on gas. Honestly, that's like taxing the top of the world European wine or beer or cheese or chocolate higher to protect the imported ones. So electricity must never be taxed more than gas. And for the electrification business case to work, the ratio should be lower than what I mentioned before. A second very important point is that not all sectors can immediately decarbonize or electrify. Then the implementation of the plan should really go first and very ambitious with the easy to electrify sectors. For instance, the low and medium temperature industrial heat, where the technology is already commercially available and just needs the business case. Process heat is 47% of industrial energy demand and barely 4% is electrified. That's really the low-hanging fruit, and based on studies, up to 1,200 terawatt hours in Europe can be electrified with off-the-shelf technologies. If member states get demand moving there, they can immediately release Europe from very expensive and volatile imports. And of course, they should continue investing in decarbonizing sectors that still need some time, but they should not no longer keep them as the main focus of the plan and of how they use the different finance, for instance, the revenues of the ETS mechanism.
Vasiliki, of course, last week we saw that there was a review of the EU ETS. What changes, in your opinion, would best support renewables deployment, more specifically wind deployment, while maintaining Europe's industrial competitiveness?
Well, the ETS has worked since it has been implemented. It is the EU's central market-based decarbonization tool. It has driven investments, including in very hard-to-decarbonize sectors. And it has raised around 43 billion euros only in 2025. So the first rule for us is do not break it. We need to preserve a strong, stable, predictable carbon price signal and to keep the market stability reserve rules-based. Europe needs to resist the temptation to flood the market with extra emission space through a weaker cap, through international credits or a heavy reliance on renewables. That's really the investment signal the whole economy reads and the one that can keep indeed investment going for many years. Second, and this is where the current proposal by the European Commission needs work, the revenues so far have not been used as they should be. At least half of national auction revenues are supposed to go to decarbonization. This is not the case today. Far more efficient monitoring, scrutiny, enforcement, and transparency to consumers on how revenues are used. Then finance should really prioritize what makes Europe energy autonomous. So renewables based, domestically sourced electrification. And then mature, commercially available projects that can measurably replace fossil fuels today. And not just innovative pilots. So competitors' concerns are real, but you need to address them with targeted support and the right conditionalities, not by watering down the carbon signal. We need to keep the price honest, effective, and then make sure that we are spending the money well.
Vasiliki, my final question to you is, if we look back 10 years from now, what decisions that are being negotiated today will determine whether Europe successfully became a clean energy leader or missed the opportunity entirely?
Yes, sure. So let me answer that by looking backwards first. Imagine if Europe had never set renewable energy targets and had never built its ETS system. We would have almost no domestic clean energy industry, and we would have even deeper fossil dependence. Now imagine the opposite. If every member state had actually applied the electricity regulation, the renewable energy directive, and the governance regulation into the detail and on time, we would be years ahead and far less exposed to every geopolitical shock. So that's the lesson. 10 years from now, the decision we'll judge ourselves on are the ones on the table right now. So a binding volume-based 2040 target, an ETS that keeps a strong price signal and spends its revenues on electrification, and the grids package that plans Europe as one system. But the single biggest determinant won't be what we legislate, it will be whether we finally implement. So policymakers at EU and national level need to sort this out with a forward-looking mindset and not short-termism. The strategy will be to get all of this right on paper and then let it stall at the national level again. This is really our moment to lead again, and I think we are really ready to meet it.
I really appreciate the fact that you ended on a positive note. Vasiliki, thank you so much for joining me today. It has been a pleasure talking with you.
Thank you very much, Pamela.
And thank you so much to our listeners. Until next time, goodbye. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Energy Transitions Podcast, brought to you by Enlit and Friends. That's a wrap from me, Pamela Larg, and our producer, Rian Mostert. We hope you can join us next time. Visit enlit.world or subscribe for more episodes.